Hello and welcome to another episode of the Council of Elrond. Today we are talking all about the Seven Rings, and no, not that absolute banger of a tune by Ariana Grande, but the Seven Rings of Power as we continue our Rings of Power deep dive miniseries. I'm Dave, and joined with me as ever is the fabulous and inspiring Johnny. Welcome, John.
Hello. Nice to be here. Thank you for that fantastic introduction.
You're very welcome. I think we should start introducing each other and build each other up from now on, because
that's nice.
We're letting, like, you have to do it to me as well. I can't just be a one-way street.
Oh, boo. I don't think you need it. I need all the compliments I can get.
I need compliments too.
You look fabulous. You look gorgeous. Oh,
thanks very much. So this is the second episode in our Rings of Power mini series deep dive. So if you want to check out our first one on the Elven Rings, we'll probably link it in the description. We'll definitely link it. But don't worry, you won't be completely lost listening to this episode. You may hear some things repeated, but that's natural when we are discussing all of the Rings of Power. So anyways, without further ado, how do we begin this episode? Johnny, I suppose I'll ask you the first question. Who actually made the Seven Dwarven Rings?
The Seven Dwarven Rings were made by Celebrimbor under the tutelage of Sauron, who was then known as Annatar, the Lord of Gifts.
Yes, very good. Yeah, you're completely right. It was Celebrimbor and the Elven Smiths of Eregion were helping.
Celebrimbor was like the leader. Do you know the name of the group of the Elven Smiths, like the Elven name?
Ooh, are you quizzing me or are you asking me?
I'm quizzing you if you know the answer, and if you don't know the answer, well, then neither do I.
They were called the Gwaith y Myrddain.
It's very good. Well done. I knew the answer too.
Sure you did. So that is, yeah, another name of those Elven Smiths that are very, very talented. And yeah, they were under the tutelage, as you said, of Sauron disguised as Annatar. And we'll probably see a lot of this in the upcoming Rings of Power TV series. So all this ring making happened in the year 1600 of the Second Age. And just in case as well, if anyone doesn't know where Eregion is, because it's not really mentioned in the Lord of the Rings films, it's the Elven realm, home to the Noldor elves, and it's just outside Khazad-dûm, so to the west of Moria. We previously discussed in the Three Rings episode that Sauron's plan was to distribute the rings to all the powerful people of Middle-earth and then control them using his One Ring, which he forged himself in secret in Mordor, but it had failed when the elves sensed something was off with him and they hid their three rings, which Celebrimbor had made himself. So this meant that Celebrimbor was left with 16 rings of power in Eregion. Later, Sauron launched an attack, captured, tortured, and killed Celebrimbor and claimed the rings in the year 1697 of the Second Age. And as we all know, he gave 9 to men and 7 to dwarves. So John, why 7 to the dwarves and not more or not less?
Why 7? Well, I mean, there were 7 dwarven clans, 7 dwarven kingdoms, 7 dwarven families, I suppose. So he gave 1 to each of the leaders of their kingdoms. And yeah, I suppose he probably gave them to the dwarves first, and then there was just 9 left over. So he was like, here, give them to the men. But so I think it was like, yeah, it was the 7. We hear the number 7 associated a lot with the dwarves, and there were those 7 different kingdoms, and the best one of those being Khazad-dûm. For the long beards?
Oh, yes, very well. Well done, actually. Can you name any of the 7 clans?
Would you? the short arses, Grumpy, Dopey, Doc, and
and all of the rest of Snow White's dwarves.
Exactly. I'd probably be able to get a few, but I like the broad shields or something. I don't know. I can't. Broad swords, I think. There's probably a few of them. I don't remember them now.
You're getting some half of the words.
Of course I am. It's like it's all like broad and grey and like all these kinds of things.
But, fat and large.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, you mentioned the Longbeards there. They are the dwarves that we see in Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit as well. So they're kind of the main group of dwarves that we know about. But there is another very famous word for these, or another nickname for these dwarves as well. They're named after
someone. Durin's folk.
Yeah, well done. So Durin's folk would be the main house, or the most powerful and the oldest house or clan of the dwarves. But since we're going to list them, I may as well list them off here. We've got the Longbeards, a.k.a. Durin's folk. We have the Firebeards. We have Broadbeams, Iron Fists, Stiff Beards, Blacklocks, and Stonefoots.
Stone feet.
Yeah, so
how many was it? Three different types of beards that they called themselves. Yeah, so long beards, fire beards, and
stiff beards.
Right,
stiff,
okay.
Stiff beards, yeah. And then we've got Iron Fists, so like the Marvel TV series.
Oh, that was crap.
We've got Blacklocks, and Broadbeams, and then Stonefoots as well, or Stonefeet, yeah. however you prefer it.
Stonefoots, I like that. I always think that when you're watching the movies, especially, I suppose, in the Hobbit movies where you see loads of dwarves, their shoes don't look comfortable at all. They look like they're just wearing, like, I don't know, blocks of cement on their feet. And yeah. Kind of like, I remember when I was in university and I was like, I had to get these like steel-capped boots for like labs and stuff that I was doing.
Yeah.
And they give you like the shittiest possible pair of boots because you buy them from the university and there's like, here, pay €40 and you get your hard hat and your high vis jacket and your steel cap boots, and you're like, okay, great, nice one. And you pay it and they give you the worst of the worst, and you're like,
yeah,
these are the absolute. I remember I actually went hiking in those boots one time. It was the worst decision I ever made because it was freezing cold, so there's like the steel in the toe just completely froze, and so I was just basically wearing like an icicle on my foot as I was hiking around. It was a disaster because we actually camped overnight up in these mountains, and I woke up in the morning, it was all completely frost and snow, and I just put my feet into these big blocks of ice to go hiking for the morning. I was like, this is the worst thing ever. Thanks for these steel cap boots. And that's what I think of every time I watch The Hobbit and see like Thorin walking around in his shitty boots.
And you'd think them living in the misty mountains and snowy mountains, they would have...
Oh, they're probably lovely.
What kind of shoes to wear?
Oh, they're probably lovely. When I see them, they're like,
big and fat and square, aren't they?
You're
right. They're like blocks.
They're not dancing
shoes.
Maybe
they just have square feet. There was the stone foots, but maybe there was the square foots as well. So
yeah.
We don't know. Tolkien never mentions the eighth clan.
Maybe they're called stone foots or stone feet just because they're basically just wearing stones on their feet. And they're like...
Maybe.
Yeah. Stone fashion.
That's funny how you mention... like in college or in university, you pay €40 and you get all this crap gear. But like, where's the rest of the 10 grand that you pay to go to this college for a piece of paper? Yeah. Like, you know, I feel the same way after spending €10,000 on my master's. And I'm like, what? Where is that going? Like, it's all online. Like, we don't.
Yeah, you didn't get books, right? Then. Yeah, yeah. Shocking.
No, and then all the foreign students, they all had to pay like 20 grand. So it blows my mind. Anywho, let's get on to the next question.
Let's get the dwarves
after them. Yeah, let's send them. What do these rings of power, or what did they actually do for their masters? So we talked about previously what the powers of the elven rings, but now let's move on to the dwarven rings. What did they do for their masters?
Well, what they actually did and what they were intended to do is not the same answer, I suppose. So obviously,
I mean powers and like that kind of way, or
yeah, you know, well,
like we've got the fire, the ring of fire, and we've got like the ring of water and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, well, the 16 that were made, where Sauron was involved and by Celebrimbor, like Celebrimbor made the three elven rings on his own and he kind of did his own thing with them. But the 16 that were made all together, that's the 9 for the men and 7 for the dwarves, they were all made at the same time, and Sauron was kind of overlooking the whole thing. And they were all kind of, I don't know if we get too much information about these specific powers, but basically just to make the wearer more powerful. And the result that it ended up having was to kind of bring out the natural powers of what those species actually had. So in terms of dwarves, they became just like, really good at mining and became luckier as well in their mining, and they always happened to find these incredible treasure hoards. And another effect that it had was just kind of it increased a lot of their different sort of desires and things, so they became a lot greedier as well. Now I don't know if you're looking for the result or what was initially supposed to be.
You're perfect, keep going.
I'm out.
Yeah, I thought that might have been the end of your rant there.
Well, I'm just, I lost my train of thought, so I can't even remember what I said. You'll have to read it back to me.
Yeah, no, well, you're perfectly right. Like, unlike the Elven Rings, they don't have those specific powers built in. Well, not that we know of. And unlike the three Elven Rings previously discussed, there isn't that much detail on the magic of the rings. They actually don't even have individual names, names that we know of. Now, there is one that we'll discuss that is given a name, I suppose, but it's not like something fancy like Ninya, Naria, or Vilya. Mm. But and you're also absolutely right that they only magnified the wearer's already natural skills and traits, so it made the dwarves more proud, greedier, and yeah, I liked how you mentioned that they made them luckier, and that is absolutely true. They were kind of just like blessed to find treasure more easily, and it also just made them kind of more narrow-minded than they already were, so they buried deeper to find newer treasures. But the interesting thing is, it didn't turn the dwarves invisible or give them unnatural long life, which eventually ended in them turning into raids. So this was kind of I don't know, maybe Sauron didn't work as hard as he could on the magic, and he kind of failed a little bit in that regard.
I think maybe I think they say that. I don't think Sauron expected them to be such hardy folk, basically, and to
be
able to resist the powers as well as they did. Obviously, the dwarves are just hardier, for want of a better word, than the race of men. So men were more susceptible to the powers of the rings, whereas the dwarves actually just kind of, you know, got on with it. I suppose Sauron was like, these lads would be easy to corrupt. Yeah. So, in the end, it was quite hard for him to corrupt them.
Men are weak.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Hardier is what the word that is mentioned, and resilient as well.
Laurel and hardier.
So why the dwarves accepted the rings, we do not actually know, but we can assume that their lust for gold and jewels was enough for them to want these gifts. Because, as we know, the elves were suspicious of Sauron, but and they kind of hid their rings and they didn't wear them. But we know that the elves and the dwarves, for the most part, didn't have a great relationship. So they probably weren't going to say, hey, by the way, there's some tainted rings going around, or they're laced with acid. So don't put them on and don't accept them.
If you see them with purple spots, don't take them.
Yeah, exactly. But even though Sauron poured his malice and evil into all 16 rings given to the men and dwarves, the dwarves were unexpectedly resilient to the effects of the rings of power. But the rings of power did distract the dwarves from Sauron in more ways than one. So the seven dwarven lords, inspired by their magic rings, accumulated these huge hoards of gold, and they became known as the Seven Hoards. And it was said that at the foundation of each of these hoards was a golden ring. So I wanted to ask you as well, what do these huge hoards of gold attract?
Dragons.
Yes, well done. Such as
do you want names of dragons?
Give me one.
Well, like Smaug.
Exactly. So like we see in The Hobbit, Smaug is attracted to this big hoard of gold. And this isn't unusual, not just in Tolkien, but lore. Yeah, they get very aroused by gold. They can basically smell it out.
I love these hoards.
Boats and hoards.
Yeah.
So the dragons can basically smell gold. And this was the downfall of a lot of these dwarven clans, or at least their leaders and their rings, because dragons claimed four of these hoards, and that is how we lost four of the seven rings, either through dragon fire melting them or just by eating them. It's not really specified.
Yeah. But
it is interesting how the one ring can't be destroyed by anything other than, you know, the Mount Doom where it was created. But dragon fire is pretty much enough to destroy anything else, including these other magical rings.
You need to remember that the one ring was made by different fires than these rings as well. So I think Sauron went to, do you know the name of the fires in Mount Doom?
The name of the fires?
Like the name of the actual mount. It's not actually called Mount Doom. That's just kind of like
Ara-Druin.
Exactly. Oh, very good. Well done. Yeah. Isn't it? Do they call it like the lakes or the cracks of Ara-Druin? And so I think that there, I think that lava was supposed to be hotter than any other lava that was on Middle Earth or something like that. So for that reason, that's why Sauron went there to make his ring there, because he could forge it and it would be from a hotter metal or sort of hotter lava, so it would be even stronger. So then nothing else was able to destroy it except for those lakes of fire. So that's why they couldn't take the One Ring to just any random volcano and dump it in there. It wasn't hot enough.
Okay. I actually didn't know that. That's interesting. I didn't know that it was just because this was the hottest flame or the hottest fire in Middle Earth. I just thought like it was just such a powerful, strong magic on the ring that it has to be destroyed in the place that it was made. Whereas the other ones were really, really powerful, but not powerful enough for dragon fire, which can basically burn almost anything. But
yeah. Well, believe it or not, I mean, take it or leave it. I don't know if I'm telling you the truth or not.
Maybe in Valinor there might be some hotter flame. And that
I think that what I'm telling you is true, but I mean, I have such a mix of information in my brain of things that I'm like, do I remember that correctly? Is that something that I'm just kind of dreamt and made up? I'm pretty sure that I read that somewhere.
But again, one of those situations where you can't really remember.
I'm not as drunk as I am.
we can say that indirectly these rings actually did lead the Dwarven kings or their descendants to their downfall. So after those four rings were destroyed or eaten, this left three rings. So we are discussing which rings. We're discussing the seven for the Dwarf Lords in their Halls of Stone. So I just kind of wanted to break up this episode with a quick trivia question to you, Johnny. First of all, are you able to recite the poem, the one that starts with three rings?
God, three rings for the Elven Kings under the sky, seven for the Dwarf Lords in their Halls of Stone, nine rings for mortal men doomed to die, one for the Dark Lord upon his dark throne, something like that. One ring to rule them all, one ring to bind them, one ring to bring them all. And then,
in the land of Mordor where shadows lie, one ring to rule them all. You're bang on, you're bang on. Well done. I wanted to ask you, who wrote this poem? And I'm not accepting J.R.R. Tolkien.
Oh, what? But he did.
No. In the universe. Who wrote this poem? Because like this is spoken in the universe. It's not just like
a narrator
poem. Yeah.
Yeah, that's also something cool about Middle Earth, where some of these like some of the facts, for example, the one of like, you know, golf being invented by whatever his name is, was it Bulger?
Bulroarer Took, was it?
Bulroarer Took, sorry, like that's like a fact in the world of Middle Earth and stuff. So it's kind of cool they have their own little facts.
But it's also like, is it real? It's kind of like legend and they don't really know if it's
they have like things like that. You've got that in-world facts or maybe fake news as well or something. I don't know.
It's kind of like I like that as well in Star Wars. In the Star Wars universe they have that kind of thing as well, where it's like, is this known in like, do they know this or is it just we know this? Like I remember, was it in the movie Solo? In the Solo movie there was one point where they were in some army base and there was like some propaganda video playing and it was playing the Imperial March. You know that. And then we were like, okay, so now it's official canon that this music is in the universe of Star Wars. So yeah, it's kind of like a fourth wall break, but
I like that.
I don't want to impede your thinking.
Oh no, don't worry, I'm stalling for time.
My Google isn't working fast enough.
My answer, no hands, I'm not Googling. I don't know. I don't know. I'm assuming it's a prophecy, so it's probably an old elf or an old wooden ship built in the Civil War. Right? I don't know.
The full quote? What's the full quote? I'm not that quote you're saying.
What in the hell is diversity? That one.
Yeah.
I may be wrong, but
I'm no expert. But
I believe diversity is an old wooden ship. Using the Civil War era. Anyway, back to Lord of the Rings. I don't know. Some old elf, Cir Dan. Or maybe, can you give me a clue? Is it an elf? Is it a Vala? Is it a what?
Well, like, there isn't an actual answer, but like, if you just, if you actually make some deductions, you can make a good guesstimate, I suppose. Like, all right, well, if we walk through it, so if you think about Sauron, well, we know that the part that says one ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them, is actually written on the One Ring. And sure. A lot of people think that that's the magic or the mantra that was used when Sauron was creating the ring. So that was like the first part of the poem that was written. And that was definitely written by Sauron.
Sure.
But in the overall poem, Sauron probably wouldn't have referred to himself as the Dark Lord in a derogatory way. This poem is well known in the West, which basically has little or no communication with Mordor. So there's no way it would have been written in Mordor and well known.
Yeah,
in the West.
I was assuming it wasn't written by Sauron, like the full thing,
the full poem.
I assumed that, but then also, I said initially, or maybe it's a prophecy, but I think that wouldn't make sense either, because if it's a prophecy, then they should have known when someone was offering them all these rings, like, oh, three for the elves, seven for the... I mean, they should have been like, wait a minute, maybe, if it was this big prophecy or something. So I don't know, maybe it was created after the rings had already been made.
I think so, yeah.
Not by Sauron, so... I don't know.
That would have been really stupid of Sauron to write that poem and then start gifting it out. And they're like, hang on a minute, I read this somewhere. Yeah. Like,
oh, you already put this up on Spotify last month. He's like, oh, damn it. They already heard my single. I don't know. It was probably
a diss track.
Was it maybe, it must be, I mean, is it by someone, is it by one of the Istari, maybe?
I don't think so. Like, I think you're initially right with your first guess.
Like an old elf.
Like, well, if we were to look at the rest of the races mentioned, this poem, it mentions men doomed to die. So that would kind of suggest it's probably not written by a human. Mm-hmm. And also the pronoun there is used for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone. So that suggests that they didn't write the poem. Now, it could have been in a dwarf as well, because they're just talking about the wider clans of dwarves.
Exactly.
But I think the fact that it mentions the three elven rings under the sky, and it's also the first race, and it's written in a lovely manner. And also elves are known for their poetry and their, you know, linguistic skills.
And just that they name themselves first.
Yeah, exactly. I know it's like the shortest number, but it's like the most beautiful. It would seem
one is the shortest number.
Elves to... That is true. Yeah. Exactly. Sorry,
3, 7, 9, 1.
Yeah, oh, I know, but it's like
being last is
kind of
cool as well, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you're
watching
a movie
out,
and they have the credits and they and featuring Sauron as himself.
Exactly. I was thinking of when you're walking out onto the football pitch, and it's like Ronaldo always wants to walk out last.
Yeah, that, or take the last penalty. Yeah,
or you know, in a boxing fight or something, like the person who comes out second is the main person on the card. I don't know.
Katie Taylor's walkout.
Classic. So do you have an answer? Do you have an educated guess on this kind of thing? Or
yeah, well,
an elf.
Probably an elf. Tolkien never specified, and it isn't clear who or what race even wrote the poem. But the elves definitely would have heard Sauron say the latter part of the poem in black speech, and they could have translated it and incorporated it in their poem. And also, some suggest that it was perhaps Elrond who wrote the poem, as Gandalf said, quote, "It was a verse long known in elven lore." And as we know, Lord Elrond is known as the lore master, so that would be kind of an educated deduction. Maybe.
I like that. Yeah. I'll buy it. Yeah. All right.
Do you think that, like, if they have Elrond write the poem in the Rings of Power TV series, people will lose their shit and be like, no, I never thought about Elrond this way, or I never thought about the poem that way. But I'm only just thinking of this now, actually. That could be a kind of a cool inclusion.
Question. It could be a cool inclusion. But then, and again, if it's never been stated, that's an area that's open, and like that's where the Rings of Power series can kind of like go in and try and like stitch those things together. They could do that, but then you're gonna get outrage if people kind of going, can't believe you've made
it's
a
be
fact about
regardless.
I know. And again, those kind of small details I mean, is it really, really important at the end of the day, which of maybe, if we say, okay, it's probably going to be enough, as long as like, I mean, if the Rings of Power decide, okay, we want Elrond to do it, you've given some really good reasons why it could have been Elrond, and that's showing that they've actually kind of taken into consideration all of these important factors, and they're looking at, okay, he's a lore master, he was there for this and this and this, and he was involved, he was around. I would have no problem if they included that in the series, and if they were like, oh yeah, he would be a good person to have written that. But
yeah, and they don't have to make a big deal of it either. They could just have scene of Elrond. Yeah, but they could
look. He's like, doing the thing. He's doing it.
But like, they could just show the first shot of Elrond. Well, no, it wouldn't be the first shot of Elrond. But at some point, somebody walks into his chambers, and you just see him writing the last letter of the poem, and then he's like, oh, hello, I didn't see you there. And then he just, like, they barely show the poem at all, and they just kind of like glimpse over it.
Well, Joe, I was watching The Return of the King the other day, and
of course,
and there was the scene where Frodo was like writing the last part of the book, and I was like pausing the screen so I could read what else was written on the other pages, and it's cool, like, it's not just like, blah, 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 blah. It's actual, like, he's saying, and then Sam did this, and then Sam married Rosie, and blah, blah. And he's actually, like, writing the story. I was like, oh, that's a nice detail. They actually, now I don't know how.
They spent some time to write two pages.
Yeah, they wrote the entire book.
Yeah.
No, so they probably just, like, wrote, like, you know, a couple of pages with that lovely font of just a couple of just things that Frodo writing down his thoughts, his hopes and dreams. And
do you ever wonder, when they're shooting those kind of shots, and like all Frodo or all Elijah Wood has to do is like do like one letter or something in like a lovely calligraphy manner, but do you ever think like they've written this amount of stuff just before, like they probably got some professional to do, and they're like, okay, Elijah, you just need to put an S and a full stop, now don't fuck it up.
Not even this, just a full stop. He's like, oh, a full stop. He does like I made a comma.
A colon
oh,
or God, something. No, I'm always thinking about tails,
right? Yeah. Sorry, period for our American listeners. That's what we're talking about.
Oh, sorry, period. Yeah. But yeah, as I'm thinking
I'm
about
assuming
this whole,
they could probably, if they got it, like, if they got a professional to do some beautiful calligraphy, I'm sure they could then have just made photocopies. So they could have like 10 of them. So
oh,
they could
true, yeah.
say to Elijah, okay, do it. And also, I mean, another thing is just whenever you see close-ups of the hands writing anything, that's definitely not like Bilbo's hands or Elijah
Wood. No, but there's, you know, definitely Holmes' hands. There's definitely a wide shot of Elijah Wood.
Yeah, but I think it's always writing. Like it shows the hands and then it like cuts to him and he's just like leaning back, lifting up the pen off the page. So I'm assuming whenever they're doing that, exactly. He's got like the pen resting on the page, and then they're like, and action, he goes, ah, it leads back. That was some good writing that I just did there. Look at my beautiful
It just reminds me of Darth Sidious after killing Mace Windu, and he's like, ah. Yeah, but
that's Darth Sidious after everything he does, like, takes a sip of
you
water.
You have done well, Anakin. Yeah, well, I suppose now that I think of it, including Elrond writing the poem in The Rings of Power, it probably does bring back memories of that scene that's too on the nose of writing a song of fire and ice in the end of Game of Thrones. Do you know when they actually have the book and he closes it? Oh my God, I can't remember any of the characters' names.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Tyrion that like is writing the song of fire and ice, and then he's like, and closes the
book? Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, this is so, like, they just completely took that from Lord of the Rings. I was like, that's, you know, I think it was nicely done in Lord of the Rings when, you know, Bilbo writes, you know, they're back again. And then at the end of The Return of the King, Frodo's added in and the Lord of the Rings by Frodo.
Yeah.
I thought that was nice.
That's true.
But then I thought it was a bit like just clunky and
I'm just surprised they didn't write like fire or Song of Ice and Fire or Fire and Ice or whichever. And they just wrote like season 8.
By D&D
10. Yeah, or episode 6. Yeah, exactly. Come back for the House of the Dragon.
If we don't put aside our enmities and band together, we will die. And then it doesn't matter whose skeleton sits on the Iron Throne.
All right, so sorry about that little tangent there, but back to the rings of power, and more specifically the three remaining rings. So four eaten by dragons or fire or whatever, back to the last three. So it isn't explicitly known how, but Sauron managed to reclaim two of the three rings sometime during the Third Age while sending out his servants to search for the One Ring. So I suppose they kind of came into the possession and he was like, ooh, handy, I'll take these ones. But the final ring remaining was the one held by Durin's folk that lived in Khazad-dûm. So we all know about Durin's folk and Khazad-dûm. So what did the ring lead these dwarves to do in Khazad-dûm exactly, Johnny?
What did it, well, it led them to delve too greedily and too deep.
Yes.
To awaken the Balrog.
The Balrog, exactly. Who's also known as?
Durin's Bane.
Yeah, so we're seeing connections like happening everywhere, which is
Durin's pain in the arse. Yeah.
The dwarves fled to the Lonely Mountain, as we see in the Hobbit book, where this ring was passed down from king to king, starting with Durin the Third. So that's the name of Durin's folk. No, it isn't. But it starts with Durin the Third is the one that gets the ring, until it fell to Thrain the Second, who was the father of Thorin. And Thorin is, again, who we know from The Hobbit. Thrain was eventually captured by Sauron whilst camping in Mirkwood, and he was tortured in Dol Guldur. And that is when Sauron finally took the last of the three rings that remained by the dwarves. This ring is commonly referred to as the Ring of Thror. So remember when I mentioned earlier that they don't really have any names, but this is the one ring that people would say, oh, this is the Ring of Thror. Thror was, of course, the father of Thrain the Second. I feel like I'm throwing out a lot of names there, but we have Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror, and you hear that in the Hobbit book and the movies as well. So,
this is no common criminal. This is Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror.
So there we are. We have four destroyed and three reclaimed by Sauron. So I just wanted to ask you, John, why do you think Sauron would have cared about reclaiming these three rings at all?
If I remember correctly, I think there was definitely a point where Sauron took three rings to, I can't remember who exactly now, one of the dwarves, and offered him the three rings if he would help him take back the One Ring. And he said that he'd give him these three rings of power if you can. And I can't remember the exact quote, but it's something like, if you can help me find this lesser of rings. It's only as in the One Ring looks like one of the lesser rings, which we spoke about in the last episode, which are lesser rings were the kind of ones that they made in the practice for making the rings of power. And they were just normally plain bands with no jewels. And there was loads of them just lying around the place. So Sauron was pretending that he was just trying to get some random crappy ring. I mean, if you're an idiot, maybe you'd fall for that trap. Like, when you have money and you're speaking to a child and you're like, why don't you just give me that piece of paper and I'll give you these four monies. And it's like,
four coins.
This is what I used to do to you when you were like 6 years old and I was 12. I was like, here, Dave, I see you've got some paper. Would you like to give me that paper and I'll give you all these monies? And you were like, okay.
I think I remember when I was a kid, when we had the Irish punt, so before the Euro, I didn't have any, I didn't know what currency meant or anything. I just remember really liking
and you still don't.
I'm still really bad with money, but I used to love the coin with the deer on it. There was one that had the Irish deer.
I think stag,
it was
brown. Yeah.
I think it might have been 50p, possibly, but that was my favorite coin. And it was...
Was it not just the £1? I think the £1 had a big stag. Not a stag party. So. People out in the piss.
But a big hen party.
Yeah, an actual stag.
I don't know. I could be wrong. I just remember it was the deer coin. But sure, I haven't seen one of those since probably 10 or so.
That's how I feel about that. If someone comes up to you and you're an adult and he's like, here, I'll give you these three amazing iPads and you just have to give me that one crappy little whatever.
Ferrari.
You're like, this smells a bit funny. If it's too good to be true, it usually is. And basically, anyway, you'll tell me now, but whichever dwarf it was basically just told him to feck off. It was like, nah, good luck, get out of here.
Feck off.
Yeah.
Head off. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And it is interesting how you mentioned that it's Sauron kind of talks about it being one of the lesser rings and the fact that it was a golden band and didn't look as fancy as these dwarven jeweled rings. But I suppose, I don't know why the dwarves refused. It was the hardiness again, or maybe just the stubbornness where they're like, nah, I'd rather with this one ring than your three beautiful rings.
I think they knew that Sauron was a bit dodgy at that stage. They were like,
yeah, maybe, but he could shapeshift into whatever he wants. So he could shapeshift into like a beautiful bearded dwarven woman. Ooh. And like offer them these rings. But
it's a good point.
I don't know. But anyways, I just want to read a passage here. So at the Council of Elrond, Gloin says, quote, "The Lord Sauron the Great, so he said, wished for our friendship. Rings he would give for it, such as he gave of old. And he asked urgently concerning hobbits, of what kind they were, and where they dwelt. As a small token only of your friendship, Sauron asked this, he said, that you should find this thief, such was his word, and get from him, willing or no, a little ring, the least of rings, that once he stole. It is but a trifle that Sauron fancies, and an earnest of your goodwill. Find it, and three rings that the dwarf sires possessed of old shall be returned to you, and the realm of Moria shall be yours forever."
Mm.
So there you go, okay. Sauron trying to manipulate his way into... I don't know, is it Gloin that was the one receiving this, but it was some dwarf that received this message, and Gloin was passing on the information at the Council of Elrond.
I see. Very good. And I like the way that Sauron was trying to manipulate them there, and he wasn't just doing it the way I would say, like, here, I'll give you three and you just give me one crappy one. He was actually saying, like, look, it's not the ring that's important. It's, you know, it's a token or whatever, and it's to show your loyalty. And it's the principle, basically. Stole from me. Yeah. So
it is kind of cool as well that Sauron actually knows about the Hobbit Bilbo, and he asks about whether he'd be willing to trade for the three. But I actually don't know, did Bilbo ever... Well, Bilbo was at the Council of Elrond, so yeah, he would have heard of it through that. But I wonder, did Bilbo hear of Sauron's proposal before it was talked about at the Council? I don't know, but... if not, that's pretty cool of the dwarves to just like keep that information away from him and not even ask Bilbo for the ring and just be like, kind of protected him in a bit. But anyways, it didn't really matter to Sauron if he was giving up the three dwarven rings. And in fact, perhaps they would have distracted the dwarves with more mining and attracting dragons to their treasure. So I'm just kind of getting at the fact that it wasn't much for Sauron to offer up these three rings. And in fact, it could have been quite helpful. And who knows? Sauron had these rings for a long time. Maybe he actually put more magic and more malice and evil will into them, and maybe...
Upgraded,
and maybe could have tried to hurt the dwarves more or turn them into raids. But like you said, they were acting, you know, precariously, and they just knew of Sauron's sneaking. He could have been lying to the dwarves as well. He was like, here, give me that ring and I'll give you these three. And then he just like grabs it quick and is like,
yoink,
I've all four. But yeah, like you said, the dwarves never gave up the information, however. So there you go.
Fair play, lads.
Yeah, fair play. So it seemed that all in all, Sauron's plan concerning the dwarves and the seven rings they were gifted didn't work, and he underestimated their hardiness and their resilience to his magic, similarly to how he underestimated the hobbits and ultimately led to his downfall. So there you have it.
The end.
Not quite. I just have a final question.
Oh, it's a Peter Jackson ending to this podcast.
Yeah, we should cut the podcast black and then just like come back.
What? you and I are just lying on the edge of Mount Doom. Just
there's another one of us scene. Needs to get married to Rosie Cotton as well.
Dibs.
Damn. Okay, but I get to kiss Viggo Mortensen. Dibs.
Ah, damn. All right, okay.
Which would you prefer, marry Rosie Cotton or just kiss Viggo once?
I want to say, my friends, you bow to no one. That's what I want to do.
La, 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 la. Right. So, final question concerning Celebrimbor. This is to you, Juan. and to the listeners as well. So to everybody, if you've been listening to this episode, which you might not have been, and to the previous episode on the Elven Rings, can you tell me how many rings did the Elven Smith Celebrimbor give away? And what were their names, Johnny?
Wait, what?
how many rings? Sorry, that was long-winded. How many rings did Celebrimbor give away?
How many rings did Celebrimbor give away?
How many rings of power, I should say.
Right, okay, yeah. So not including the lesser rings, of course.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Rings of power. Well, he gave away... He gave away the three Elven Rings. And... Is it just three? Because he holds on to the other 16, I think, and that's when Sauron comes and he claims and he takes all 16 rings. But the only three that he gave away and he sent away because they were the most precious to him were the Elven Rings. Mm-hmm. I believe, I think. Is that the right answer?
Yeah. What are the three rings' names? Bonus.
Vilya, Narya, and Nenya.
Yes, very good. So, as we described earlier, Sauron attacked Eregion and claimed the other 16 rings. And then there was the three that Celebrimbor gave away. And then there's obviously the one ring, which makes 20. Now, this is all detailed in the Silmarillion. However, in the Lord of the Rings appendices, it describes that Durin's folk had a legend that Celebrimbor himself hand-delivered their Ring of Power to Durin the Third. So this is the ring that would later become known as the Ring of Thror, the one that we know most about. So this is kind of the final ring that Sauron captures after the captures from the dwarves. So this doesn't seem incredible, as we discussed on another podcast, that the elves of Eregion and the dwarves of Khazad-dûm had built a rare but very strong relationship. So it just really depends on which part of Tolkien's canon you're looking at. The answer to how many rings Celebrimbor gifted is either three or four. You decide. Either way, their fate is the exact same. So it doesn't really matter if Sauron came and attacked Eregion and there was one ring less, or if he captured them all, or, you know, it doesn't really matter, because in the end, Sauron does get that ring back from
it. Matters to someone, Dave. It definitely matters to someone on Twitter.
Oh, well, that's true.
But just to our listeners as well, that Dave's talking about, like, Khazad-dûm and Eregion. If you're a fan of the movies and you don't know much about, like, the maps and things like that, basically Khazad-dûm, again, that's Moria, and Eregion is the area just outside, which is basically connected by the doors of Durin. So that door of Durin was used by the elves and the dwarves to pass between Moria, Khazad-dûm, and the area of Eregion. So Celebrimbor was just, on the doorstep there, and he probably passed through to say, how's it going, every now and again. And so, like you said, it wouldn't have been strange for him to just deliver that to King Durin at the time.
Yeah. And I suppose it is another takeaway that you have to remember that Tolkien's canon isn't completely complete. Like, he does, there are some little contradictions, but it's cool. Like, he's got some contradictions in the Silmarillion that contrast to the Lord of the Rings, like we see in this example here. And there's lots of other ones. So when people get a bit annoyed that, you know, if I was to say, like, oh, well, Celebrimbor once handed a ring to Durin the Third, people be like, no, that didn't happen, he only gave away three rings. But you just have to look at Tolkien's wider lore and look at all the aspects of Tolkien's canon and see
and
that.
headcanon
as well.
Yeah, I only learned that term from our good friend Dan from Voicing.
Oh, really?
Recently. I think I may have seen it before, but when we did an episode with him recently, and he was saying, you know, oh, if this is your headcanon, I was like, oh, I like that term. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's in my heart, but this is my, sorry, it's in my head, but this is my, maybe I'm going to start saying it's my heart canon. This is what I have in here.
Oh, that's beautiful. I've heard that term so many times, especially for Star Wars. There's so many things going on with the canon of Star Wars, and people are like, did this person train this person or whatever? And then a lot of people go, well, that's my head canon. Or especially since Disney scrapped all the legends, or scrapped all the, I can't remember what the previous canon was called, and they called it legends now. So like all the old comic books and they start bringing back some of the characters, but people have a lot of headcanon where they go, I like this part of the Legends and I'm going to pretend that's real for me.
Is that the same as people when they say, I'm living my truth or something? Because I don't know what the hell that means when people say that. I'm like, what are you talking about?
I don't really know what that means. I'm living my truth.
Have you ever heard that? It's such like a common term though that I see. Like, I mean, people, oh, she's living her truth. And I'm like,
I haven't heard that. No, I've heard people saying like the term my truth, which basically means like, I'm not telling you a lie. This is my truth. Even if they're factually wrong. It's like someone, do you know, it's like someone recounting a scenario where they are in the wrong, but to them it was right at the time or they didn't know any better. And they're like, well, I'm just speaking my truth. So this is my truth, even though if it's wrong. I've heard
that's
that
what that's what I think I'm talking about. I mean, we're getting into psychology here, I think, which is just, which we are completely, you know, adapt to talk about on this episode, I'm sure. don't listen to us. Don't take any advice from us on this type of thing. But maybe that was like, maybe that's my truth for what happened with Celebrimbor. And if he gave this ring or not, you can be like, if somebody tells you a fact that you just don't agree with, you can be like, well, I'm living my truth.
This might have been the truth of the dwarves, because it is a legend that Celebrimbor himself handed the ring to Durin the Third. So we talked about before as well how the rivalry between elves and dwarves, and that came from the whole killing of King Thingol. And, you know, the elves believed one thing, the dwarves believed another. The elves believed that it was the dwarves just came and butchered. They actually killed King Thingol, but then the dwarves were told by other dwarves that it was actually Thingol that were like, you know, didn't want to pay them, and he swiped at them. And so the dwarves' truth for them has always been like the elves are
that's
the ones that started it.
Another cool detail as well, that like, we know that in the world that we live in, there are certain facts that maybe someone believes and then somebody else believes an opposite thing, where they're like, no, like, I mean, you know, politically or in any sort of area. So it's cool. It's almost like it adds more reality to the world, or more kind of detail to the world of Middle Earth, where maybe, and we know that some parts of the book, you can have people saying, oh, well, in the book it says this, but then you're kind of going, yeah, but that book is supposed to be from the perspective of the elves, for example. And so maybe that actually what's written in black and white in the book maybe is not the reality of the situation. It's not actually canon, because it was like, oh, it was the perspective of the elves and they didn't know the real truth or whatever. So I don't know. All those kind of things are really cool when you look in even deeper into the thing. And it kind of, as I said, it's not like an error for me. It almost makes it even more like the real world
that
we live in. So it's cool.
Yeah. And that's probably one of the best things about the A Song of Ice and Fire books as well. And the Game of Thrones TV show. The fact that all those books are written like chapter to chapter in a certain person's perspective. So when you're actually reading it, there's a lot of lies, manipulation, and just like incorrect facts that go on. It's like the, what do they call it? The not unresponsible narrator, but the kind of like the untrustworthy narrator. I can't remember the term that's commonly used, but something could be told from a certain perspective. And then you see in the next chapter, the person that received that information will just straight up lie to another character about the information that they received. Class. And you have to kind of decipher yourself what's going on. So I know a lot of people that are like very invested in the Song of Ice and Fire books are like, yeah, but this is what's told, but I don't really believe that's what's happening. And this is what's going on here. So it is, it's really cool.
All I know is if the narrator is Morgan Freeman, I'm going to believe whatever he says.
And on that bombshell, I think it's time to end the episode.
7 to the Dwarf Lords, great miners and craftsmen of the mountain halls.
So, thanks very much, guys, for listening today. And if you have any other interesting hypotheses concerning the Seven Rings and what powers they may have possessed, please let us know and get in touch on all of our socials linked in the podcast info section. And also, if you want to support us, don't forget we now have a Patreon, which is linked there too. So thanks very much, guys, and we will see you next week.
Cheerio.